Today's podcast is brought to you by our awesome patrons at patreon.com and by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/theratalk. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Take advantage of this special promotion. Go to audibletrial.com/theratalk and download your free audiobook today.
You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on. Let me change some words here. All right. Ready? Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held. Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin, your host. This is episode number 35. Sarah Talk. I have my wife, Becca, in the studio with me again today. It is the morning of December 12th. We're coming into Christmas here. My parents are getting ready to come into town, and so we may have a weird production schedule coming up the rest of the month because of all of that. Next week, provided all things work out the way they're supposed to, we have scheduled to appear on the show Florida State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, and that's going to be a really fun interview. One of the bright spots, I think, in this pitiful election. He came from Equality Florida, where he spent some time on their team, so he's been working for the LGBT community here in Central Florida, and so now it's going to be interesting to see what he wants to get done in the Capitol. Now, the problem with that is, of course, that we are a Republican-majoritied state, like most in the South. So, you know, he's got an uphill battle to fight, but at least we've got somebody out there on our side who's trying to do the right thing. Carlos just won the seat in the Florida House of Representatives, and so we'll be talking to him again if all things go correctly. We'll be talking to him next week. That'll be a lot of fun. In further 2016 election news, you know, we talked about Jill Stein has filed for a recount in three different states. One of them went forward. One of them, I think she withdrew it. But here in Florida, an Orlando attorney has filed a suit for a presidential race recount. And this comes from Central Florida News 13. An Orlando lawyer has officially filed a lawsuit for a statewide recount in the presidential race. Donald Trump was named the winner in Florida, but by a razor-thin margin. The attorney filed the 549-page complaint Friday in Leon County. Contesting this election is one of the most important things we can do to preserve our democracy, attorney Clint Curtis said. If we can't contest an election where everyone was sure of the outcome and it went the other way, we won't be able to contest an election ever again. Curtis said Monday that there are numerous irregularities on how the election was conducted, among them problems with electronic machines, and voters being turned away. The funds for his filing are being provided by donors and supporters, and this was one of the points of contention that Jill Stein was trying to bring up, because you know, who the hell is going to be able to put up $1 million or however much to, right, you know, to fund this recount?
It's an insane amount of money for...
Florida state law does not allow for any candidate to request a recount. So like we saw in those other three states, Jill Stein, who was on the ballot, requested a recount, right, as a candidate. But here in Florida, you can't do that, meaning that third-party candidate Jill Stein could not force a recount in the state, even if she paid for the cost, like she's doing in Wisconsin and Michigan. And she gave up her bid. Yeah, so here it is. She gave up her bid for a recount in Pennsylvania. The Green Party presidential candidate said voters could not pay a $1 million bond that state court requested Friday night. Stein is still pushing for recounts in Wisconsin and Michigan. In Florida, the courts have 10 days to respond to the filing. This article is December 5th, so there should be a response soon. And if the recount determines that Clinton did get the most votes, the state's electoral votes would be reassigned to Clinton and would totally shake everything up.
It's getting down to the wire here.
A couple days left.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all the election talk I can handle for today.
That's refreshing.
It. That's all I got.
That's it. Good.
I just can't do it anymore. So we discussed this story on two episodes back, 33, I guess it would be, of the 7-year-old boy in Calgary who died because the parents treated him with holistic bullshit. And in the first story, I didn't really give a lot of details. So there's another version of this story from the Raw story that I want to go over real quick because it has a little bit more detail to the story. Basically, they treated his infection instead of going to the doctor and getting actual medicine. They gave him some dandelion tea and oil of oregano. Meh, no big deal. And then they finally called 911 after the boy went into convulsions. Every organ in his body was starting to fail, testified Dr. Elizabeth Brooks Lim at Lovett's trial, the parents of this child. The major organs all showed signs of an infection in the blood, and as a result of this infection, the organs that normally produced the immune response of the body appeared exhausted from having to counter an infection. Brooks Lim admitted that the child's symptoms might initially have appeared to be a cold or flu to the average person, but she said, the convulsions, slurred speech, and other worsening symptoms should have suggested a more serious illness. Ryan was already dead when he arrived March 2nd, 2013 at Alberta Children's Hospital, another doctor testified. The 47-year-old Lovett told police that she believed her son was suffering from a cold or flu but seemed to be improving after she administered natural remedies instead of antibiotics. But she admitted the boy complained of leg pain, couldn't stand on his own, and his eyes became dilated a couple of days before he collapsed and went into convulsions. Now, again, this was not in the original story that we read.
Right.
Lovett was charged with criminal negligence and failure to provide the necessities of life. Ryan's birth was not registered.
What?
And his mother said he was born with the assistance of a midwife, and she had taken him to a naturopathic clinic for health treatments instead of a doctor.
Oh my God, this kid was screwed
from
the start.
From day one. The boy's father, who had been estranged from Lovett since shortly after their son's birth, said he learned Ryan had died through Facebook.
Whoa.
Just by fluke, I just happened to log in one day, said Brian Jerome, the child's father. I probably hadn't looked for a couple of months or something, and I see all of these condolences on her feed. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Jerome, who had created a fake Facebook account to stay informed about his son, contacted a friend of Lovett's to find out what had happened. She said, you don't know? And I'm like, know what? Jerome recalled. Oh, Ryan was sick and he died. This was over a week after it happened, so I didn't know anything. That just blew my mind apart, and it's been horrible ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. See, that's why I wanted to go back to the story, because there's just so much more to the story. So, yeah, there's a lot more going on in that story.
That's messed up right there.
Right?
It was bad enough.
Now, it doesn't say whether or not they have been, you know, what, because they're just now going through the court system, I guess, there in Canada.
Right.
So I don't know how, you know, how that's progressing, but.
Still insane.
Right. Speaking of insane medical nonsense.
There's more.
There's always more. This one comes from The Guardian via Raw story. Christian docs remove 3-year-old girl's genitals because they feared she was masturbating.
What?
Dr. Renee Bergstrom broke the silence about her experience with female genital mutilation as a child. She recounted how when she was just 3 years old, she was taken to the doctor to have her clitoris removed, Bergstrom wrote for The Guardian. Bergstrom is now 72 years old, but is now breaking the silence about female genital mutilation, which happened in white Midwest America. We all like to think of that as an African problem, you know, or third world countries. She wrote of her Christian mother taking her to a church clinic to have the procedure as a, quote, cure for masturbation.
I was 3 years old when it happened to me. My mother was concerned that I was masturbating and my little face turned very red. So she took me to a doctor who said, well, I can fix that, and cut off my clitoris.
A lot of Americans don't know about this particular type of history because it was a quick procedure and it was done in a physician's office, and also because probably it wasn't something that families probably really talked about amongst themselves either.
And that was Dr. Sarah Rodriguez, Northwestern University Medical School.
Largely because it was done as a treatment for masturbation.
I remember the pain. I remember seeing my mother at the end of the table. As I was growing older, she told me she knew it was a mistake and that I was not supposed to ever talk about it.
My scar did not stretch, so my first child was in danger of becoming stuck in the birth canal. Without medical intervention, I, like many mutilated women, could have died in childbirth.
It was never rare, but it also wasn't common. Maybe one physician would have done it maybe once or twice in their sort of practicing lifetime, perhaps, and other physicians wouldn't have done it at all.
This is not my shame. The shame belongs to our culture, the medical profession. Even though this angers me, if some people will listen to what is happening to their sisters throughout the world, because it also happened to a white person, it's worth my sharing my story.
So that video was produced by The Guardian. And so again, we talk a lot about how this happens in Africa. And that's just a thing that's normal in Africa, and where everybody's, you know, trying to fight to make it stop, basically. But, you know, here's a case where it's happening right here at home, and you probably don't even know that. And that's also to say, and this is a conversation, again, that I want to have some actual experts come on the show and talk about, because we get all worked up about female genital mutilation, aka FGM. And yet, because Jesus, everyone's perfectly acceptable to cut the foreskin off of their kid's penis, which is not a medically necessary procedure either. Yes, we argue that female genital mutilation is somehow different. But is it really? 224-40-SARAH, 224-407-2724, producer at saratalk.com. Let us know what you think. Is there a difference between female genital mutilation and circumcision? Is there any difference? Do you see a benefit, a medical benefit to male circumcision? Because I think we're just doing it because some old man in the middle of the desert heard voices in his head one night that told him to cut the skin off of his son's fucking penis, and now here we are all doing it still.
Mm-hmm.
So let us know what you think. Ohio passes a bill that would ban abortion, Ohio passed this bill.
Oh.
That bans abortion after a month and a half. Now, Ohio legislators passed a heartbeat bill last week that bans abortion after a fetus's heartbeat can be heard, on average about 6 weeks into a pregnancy. The bill has no exception for cases of rape or incest. If you can hear a heartbeat, you can't take it out. The bill was tacked on at the last minute to another bill addressing child abuse. It was approved in the Republican-dominated state House and Senate, and will now move on to Republican and anti-abortion Governor John Kasich's desk. He will sign or veto it within the next 10 days. This posted on December 7th, so we should be seeing some sort of response. I guess he has 5 days left now to act on that, or if he does nothing, it will just become law. But this is ridiculous. This is something that happens so often in our legislative system. Pieces and parts of other laws will get tacked onto a bigger, broader bill just to try to get it passed through and piggyback and onto another bill. And it's just bullshit that we even allow that as a thing. A hallmark of lame duck, a term used to describe sessions of lawmakers that sit between when the elections are over and when the new lawmakers take office, is a flood of bills, including bills inside of bills. And we will closely examine everything we receive, said Kasich's press secretary, Emily Kalmbach. Many women do not know they are pregnant until they have missed two periods, which can often be around 8 weeks. Others may find out before the six-week mark, but might still be unable to get an abortion in time because there are a lack of clinics in Ohio, and state laws require women to wait 24 hours between an informational appointment about abortion and having the procedure done. Gotta go home and think about it. Pray to Jesus and see if you're sure that that's what you want to do. And here's the other thing. This abortion ban nonsense. We've tried banning shit in this country before. And guess what? It doesn't work. There was a ban on same-sex marriages. And so people just roommated together.
Mm-hmm.
There was a prohibition on alcohol that we tried. That was real fucking smart.
Look how long marijuana has been illegal.
Right? So the evidence is that if you ban an abortion, you don't make abortions go away. You increase the number of back alleys with coat hangers. The ban was attached at the last minute to another measure, House Bill 493, which expedites the process by which doctors report cases of child abuse to law enforcement authorities. So again, here's a law about if a case of child abuse comes into your office, we're mandating that you report that to the authorities within a certain time frame. It has absolutely nothing the fuck to do with an abortion rule. And yet, we combine these two bills.
It's insane.
Mm-hmm. The bill was written by anti-abortion and anti-LGBT rights activist Janet Porter, formerly Janet Folger. She authored the book, The Criminalization of Christianity. Read this book before it becomes illegal. That's its actual subtitle, and it is available on Amazon.com. If you're interested in that kind of nonsense, we'll put it on the website, and you can click the link and pick up your copy and support the show that way. I might actually buy this book and do like a on-the-show reading of it.
Wow.
The Criminalization of Christianity. Republican State Senator Chris Jordan called for the Heartbeat Amendment to be included earlier Wednesday morning. The Ohio Senate voted 20-11 to add the amendment, then passed the bill with a primarily partisan 21-10 vote. Following Trump's election, anti-abortion legislation has been introduced all over the country, including a law that would ban abortion entirely in Indiana. Go figure. Pro-abortion rights groups are fighting back. Last week, Planned Parenthood, the Center for Reproductive Rights, and the ACLU filed lawsuits in three states to overturn abortion restrictions, saying that they were against the 1973 Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade, as well as June's decision upholding the abortion rights law. In the latter, the court voted 5-3, striking down abortion provider restrictions in Texas. And if you remember, that one was something about they had to have hallways wide enough for a medical transport or some general nonsense bullshit. Remember
right,
that?
Right, yeah.
Like they had to have a facility that met all of these requirements and that none of them had. No. And it was specifically written just to shut them down. Well, the court ruled that they can't do that. Let's move into the environmental story bucket.
Do you hear giraffes are going extinct?
I heard giraffes are going extinct.
Sad day.
It is. Why can't we just respect nature? Even my six-year-old.
Oh, he was like,
We were doing dishes the other night or something, yeah. And he was going on about that. What was he talking about?
It was giraffes. I think it was the giraffes.
Yeah, it was.
He says, why are they killing them? That's not nice. He just was so upset about it.
Yeah.
They have really pretty fur, apparently.
Yeah. Well, and I talked to him about rhinoceroses and elephants.
Rhinoceros.
And elephants. And, you know, being hunted for their tusks their horns. And their horns and how shitty humans are.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about this in a lead-in last week on the Thanksgiving Leftovers episode. Mm. The Dakota Access Pipeline.
Oh, yes.
Will be rerouted in a victory for Standing Rock Tribe, but is it a real victory? This is from BuzzFeed. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced they will no longer allow the Dakota Access Pipeline to cross under a river near the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota, marking a huge win for Native Americans and protesters who had long opposed the construction. Assistant Army Secretary for Civil Works, Jo Ellen Darcy, said she based her decision on a need to explore alternate pipeline routes. So should we really get excited? No, because they're just going to move this thing somewhere else.
And it's going to be somebody else.
It makes me so mad. One of my, I don't even want to say friends, but
some person,
friend
you know?
On Facebook, some dude from back home, right, in rural Podunk, Illinois, posted a graphic and it was just like spaghetti all over the United States map. And it said something about which pipeline now? Like, which pipeline is the problem? Showing that the nation is just really scattered, littered with pipelines. Well, that's fine. But then go back to the Google and type in United States pipeline disasters. And you'll see just as many squiggly lines all over the map of where pipelines have failed and oil spilled out into the environment.
Yeah, we need to stop putting in new pipelines and we need to start using clean energy so that we can get rid of the old pipelines.
Yes, please. Like, how is this not just common sense?
Because people are stupid. They're not smart. Actually, it's money. Money talks.
Yeah, that's true.
It's going to cost way more to do the right thing than they're going to make off of the wrong thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that until you get to a tipping point,
right?
The elites of the world, which we hate, right? We always talk about the bad, nasty, dirty elites who are screwing over the middle class. But those are the people who will, out of pocket, buy into solar and wind and renewables. And they will be the first ones to put solar on their rooftops. And they will be the first ones to buy vehicles that don't run on gasoline anymore. They will be the first adopters of this new technology. And eventually, once more and more people at the top buy into that, then the price starts coming down.
Right.
And then more and more people are able to reach that level of technology. And then the price drops a little more.
It's trickle down.
It's not trickle down.
I'm kidding.
Jesus Christ.
The problem is that we live in an age of instant gratification. You invest all of this money on solar and wind power for the masses, but you're not going to get a return on that investment for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So, no, I don't want to do that when I can sell oil when it's already, you know.
Right. It's already making me money.
I get money in my pocket now. And it's sad because the people that could afford to do those types of things don't need the money right now.
Yeah. Since August, thousands of demonstrators have camped at the Standing Rock site to stand with Native Americans in opposing the 1,172-mile-long pipeline, or 1,886 kilometers. It's a good trick to switch the metrics when you want to make it look bigger. Which is designed to carry 20 million gallons of oil across the Midwest every day, 20 million gallons a day through this pipeline.
That's insanity.
If you're not following activist and New York Post writer Sean King, you need to be following him on Twitter, on Facebook. He is starting a grassroots movement to try to push back on this environmental concerns, on the racial injustice that's happening in America. And it's called the Injustice Boycott. It's injusticeboycott.com. Go check it out. Join. We get an email each day that we're like, each day there's an action item that we're doing leading up to Martin Luther King Day. And it's just putting pressure on businesses who are part of the problem. It's putting pressure on politicians who can solve part of these problems. You know, one of them was, it was about a police officer who basically just firing squad killed a man with 20 bullets in his back or whatever. And still working for the force. No big deal. Like nothing happened.
Yeah, I don't get that.
We created a tweet storm to try to put pressure on the city to make a change and do the right thing. But anyway, so check out Sean King. We'll put a link to that as well.
He's got a lot of fires going too.
He's
all over the place.
Yeah, but he was instrumental in this Dakota Access Pipeline thing.
Yeah.
One of the, like, I think the third day of the Injustice Boycott was requesting donations to send supplies to the folks who are there. Winter has set in, and it is, the livable conditions out there are kind of bleak right now.
Right.
So we bought like a van and a truck and a couple of trailers and a whole bunch of supplies for those people. Like everybody came together mm-hmm. and poured in the money to take care of the not only the protesters, but the tribes who right. who generally live there anyway.
Well, and then that's the other concern that a lot of people have been having, even though that we're rerouting this thing. There's still people that are staying there because...
Right. Is that the bait and switch? Like
right.
we just said, okay, just kidding. We're not going to build it. And then as soon as they yeah. leave, we go out in the night and start the trucks up right. and start digging.
So you still have people out there trying to protect the land and it's still sub-zero temperatures.
Right. Speaking of temperatures, good segue.
Well, I didn't even try.
Can we all agree that global warming is a thing? So... Breitbart, so funny, right? And I hate to use the phrase alt-right because it's becoming normalized, right? But it's a version of the far right it's the Klan, it's the racist, biggity white supremacists,
the sinister people, the
right. So it's an extreme version of the conservative mindset, but apparently they took a video that the Weather Channel posted once upon a time and tried to use that video to argue that climate change is a hoax. And the Weather Channel slapped back in this video.
So last week, Breitbart.com published an article claiming that global warming was nothing but a scare and global temperatures were actually falling. Problem is, they used a completely unrelated video about La Nina with my face in it to attempt to back their point. Now, what's worse is that the U.S. Committee on Space Science and Technology actually tweeted it out. Here's the thing. Science doesn't care about your opinion. Cherry picking and twisting the facts will not change the future, nor the fact, note fact, not opinion, that the Earth is warming. So let's break it down. Their first claim is that global land temperatures have plummeted by 1 degree Celsius since the middle of this year, the biggest and steepest fall on record. Now, that was based on one satellite estimate of global land temperatures, not a consensus. And second of all, land temperatures aren't an appropriate measure. The Earth is 70% water, and water is where we store most of our heat energy. So when you look at sea surface temperatures and you combine that with land temperatures, you actually get a record high for November of 2016.
I love her. It's great. It. And she's just got this saucy look on her face like,
I'm going to show you, bitch.
Second claim. It can be argued that without El Nino, 2014 to 2016 would not have been record warm years. Now, you're taking a look at the Arctic sea ice melting here in this video from NASA. When you actually normalize the data, aka take out the El Nino spike in temperatures, 2015 and 2016 still come in as the warmest years on record. So that brings me to claim number three. Many think that 2017 will be cooler than previous years. Now, it is typical, yes, for temperatures to drop in a post-El Nino environment, but certainly not to record lows. If that claim was correct, we would have had global record lows all over the last century. We haven't seen that since 1911. The last time we fell below the 20th century average was in 1976, and guess what? That was directly following the 1974-1975 strong El Nino. So next time you're thinking about publishing a cherry-picked article, try consulting a scientist first. To all my fellow scientists out there, let's make the facts louder than the opinions.
I love it.
Oh, she's awesome.
That's fantastic.
What was her name?
Kate Parker, meteorologist.
Okay.
I'd love to get her on the show. Yeah. Let's try to book her on the show. That'd be fun. Now we'll move into the LGBTQ community. School district's ban on LGBT groups struck down by a federal court from Pink News. This is here local. And I think we kind of teased at this in a previous episode, but a Florida school district that banned students from forming a gay-straight alliance has been smacked down by a federal court. In 2011, Lake County School Board in Florida, which is like 15 minutes north of where we are, opted to block students at Carver Middle School in Leesburg from forming a gay-straight alliance club. After the school declined to allow the club, the ACLU launched a legal challenge which has slowly worked its way through the court system. 2011, I would say it has slowly worked its way through the system.
Like molasses.
God, the kids who wanted to form this club aren't even in that school anymore.
Yeah.
This week, the case appeared to finally reach resolution as the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed that the school must treat all extracurricular clubs the same, under the Equal Access Act. The case hinged on the interpretation of the phrase, quote, secondary school. In the EAA, the courts affirmed that the law applies to middle schools as well as high schools, allowing proceedings to address the student's request to establish the club on campus. The ACLU had argued LGBT students are far more likely than their fellow students to face harassment and discrimination in school. LGBT students in schools with GSAs are significantly less likely to experience victimization related to their sexual orientation and gender expression, and are less likely to feel unsafe than students without a GSA. The school board at that point had not issued a comment on the ruling. So there you go. That's a big win for, especially here in Florida. But that's also to say that the phrase secondary school, where I went to school, middle school didn't exist when I went to school. It was grade school and high school.
Well, like, and
that's it. That's what you had.
The school our kid goes to is like kindergarten to eighth grade, and then you go to high school. Like they're doing that now.
Yeah. See, ours was K-6. Seventh and eighth grade were junior high, but at the high school building. So seventh and eighth grade was junior high, and then 9, 10, 11, 12. But
we had where I was. It was grade school was until fifth grade, and then you had 6, 7, 8 middle school.
Right. See, that's
we didn't call it junior high.
Right.
But it's like you know
that's a new thing. The middle school is new.
Well, yeah,
that's my point. That was it.
And
just to say that
right. And now it seems like they're phasing it out because they're grouping it with either a high school or an elementary school.
They're going backwards. This is Sarah's pendulum theory of everything.
That's true.
Everything operates on a pendulum. I don't even think I've talked about that on the show, but it's a good example of it. Mm-hmm. This one, oh God, this story. Have you seen the video, the commercial of this kid in the CoverGirl commercial?
I've seen screenshots of it. I haven't actually watched the commercial.
I tried to find it, and I found all kinds of other videos about him, but I couldn't find like the actual commercial, which kind of boggles my mind.
Is it a commercial or is it just an ad?
No, it was a commercial.
There's an actual.
Yeah, let me read the story. So this one is from Homeschool Base.
Oh, I think I've heard this one.
I'm sure you have. this is like it's a forum for homeschooler parents, right? Parents who homeschool their children. And this is an opinion piece that was posted there on November 27th. Mommy, why doesn't daddy wear makeup? Black Friday events lead conservative mother to fear the worst. Dun, dun, dun. This is the question my 6-year-old asked me on Friday afternoon. We were watching Countdown to Christmas on ABC, and a commercial came up in between watching Toy Story. The first image is of a boy in a backwards hat with ink and black makeup. He narrates the commercial, but doesn't reappear until the end. In the last few scenes, he is arching his back and holding his thighs next to 6 or so other girls. His appears to be the most feminine of all the poses. The tagline read, "Equal is beautiful." The final image was branded with #LashEquality. My son watched this commercial while I wasn't paying any attention. Well, you should pay more attention to your children. Because it was just a CoverGirl commercial, I didn't think I would need to cover the screen. Cover the screen? You gotta be fucking kidding me. I was preoccupied speaking with David, my husband. Look, every year in junior high and high school, my uncle, he was our PE teacher and coach, football coach and some other things. But every year, his Christmas tradition was to take us down class by class to the AV room, and over the course of like 3 days, we watched National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation on the shitty old little 13-inch TV with the VHS player on the rolly cart that they rolled, you know.
Right.
But we would go down, we would sit, turn the lights off, watch this movie. Every year, Christmas tradition. That was his thing. And to this day, I still try to watch it every year.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget in the scene where he's daydreaming about the girl from the lingerie store at the mall or wherever, right? Diving into the swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a super sexed up scene.
Oh, yeah.
And my uncle would take his little manila envelope folder thing that he carried around with him everywhere he went, and covered the screen with it during that scene.
Oh my gosh.
So that our impressionable young eyes wouldn't see it.
Right. That's hilarious.
Cover the screen for a fucking CoverGirl commercial. You've got to be kidding me. Both of us were caught off guard. We didn't know how to answer. How to answer what? Mommy, why doesn't Daddy wear makeup? Because he doesn't fucking want to.
Right.
Let's start there.
That's a great response. The truth? Maybe?
Right.
Like.
Right. Both of us were caught off guard. We didn't know how to answer. I don't know why, but the most logical thing we could think of at that moment was to say, no, that's a girl. So it seems to me that you have no business homeschooling anybody because you have absolutely no fucking logical power in your brain. If your mind can't handle a question like this, you have no business teaching a child their, quote, formal, formative education.
Well, I have thoughts on that, but...
I'm sure you do. The commercial comes on a second time. It is undeniable. It's a guy. Now we knew we had to talk about it. Daddy doesn't wear makeup because makeup is for girls. Well, why is that boy wearing makeup? And now we are faced with a moral dilemma. Dun, dun, dun! The fuck? Do I lie to my son? Or do I tell my 6-year-old my full opinion? I thought about lying and saying, that's how his eyes really look. Or do I tell the truth and have a deeper discussion with him? Maybe that's the way his mommy and daddy chose to raise him. But that's not the way we are choosing to raise you. Does a parent end it there? Or continue to say, that is sinful and wrong. He shouldn't be doing that. And his parents are wrong. The fuck are you moral authority on anything? Much less just makeup.
Right.
And if you're trying, listen, if we're going to talk about that this is sinful and wrong, then mother of child, do you wear makeup? Because somewhere in that dusty old book of yours, it says that God created you perfectly. And if you believe in all that mumbo jumbo bullshit, then you shouldn't need makeup for any reason. To make you feel better about yourself, mm-hmm. to make you think you look better to other people, to make you think you look better to yourself, for any of those reasons. Because your God made you perfect. So don't talk to me about sin and moral dilemmas. The only moral dilemma here for me is that you're allowed to educate a child. This is truly what modern parenting has become, having to make a split decision in a single moment and have both parents on board. That's not modern at all. That it goes back to the beginning of parenting, to the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have always had to make those decisions.
It has nothing to do with the decision. It has everything to do with your thought process and what your beliefs are and
well,
whether
sure.
or not you're going to force your child to feel the same way about something that you do, which is wrong.
Right.
You know?
But it's not... It's definitely not modern parenting, but there has been, historically, all kinds of decisions like that, right?
Sure.
If you're a shitty parent and you don't talk about this shit ahead of time, then things are going to come up. Absolutely. Are we going to do Santa Claus? Are
right.
we going to teach them Santa Claus or not? That's
well,
something that you should discuss ahead of time.
Right.
When your son comes home and says, you know, little Johnny says there's no Santa Claus, you got to be prepared for shit like that.
The thing that comes to mind, and this poor kid will probably never learn it from what I can get out of this article, is when I was in school, elementary school, I think it was 3rd or 4th grade, they sent home a newsletter with a permission slip. Would you like your child to participate in sex education class? And
nope, they did not.
No, they did not. And here's the thing, I think that for no matter who you are, there's probably a lot of families where mom and dad or mom and mom or dad and dad have two different opinions about the answer
sure.
to that question. But that's, you know, that's one of those things. And you might have to think about it and make a decision quick.
Mm-hmm.
Or
you deflect and you say.
Right. Like there's things that come up like this TV commercial where you have to answer a question. Children are curious. And as a parent, you want to answer their questions when they ask them, because a lot of the times they might just go on and forget about it. But what I've learned with my son is that if he asks a question and I don't have an answer at that specific moment, it's okay to put it off. If they're really, really curious about it, you can come back to it later because they're not going to let it go. And you can buy yourself time. But this, I think, with this thing, I think there's way more going on in this.
Oh, of course there is.
I mean, first of all, they're homeschooling children.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that I know that homeschools, there's like two or three reasons why you homeschool. You homeschool because you're afraid of for your child's safety. You homeschool because your child has special like needs where they need one-on-one attention, or you homeschool because you don't want them going to a public school and learning things that you don't agree with.
Right.
So those are the three. And I find that people that, well, look at the, is it the Duggars?
Yeah.
All of those kids are homeschooled. Why? There's a very, you know, they have a very strict belief and mindset. And to me, like when I look at people that are deep in their religions and they're homeschooling their kids, to me, that's a huge sign that they're just trying to control what information their child receives.
Since he is six and he is going to see more images like this, it appears. What are you going to do? Unplug the TV and throw it in the lake?
Maybe.
We decided to go the Fuller route. That is how his parents chose to raise him, and so on and so forth. My fear is that this will just lead to more questions. Now, we have to monitor more heavily what he is watching. If you're a good parent, you should have been doing that anyway.
And do you want your children to ask more questions? Yeah, why would you be afraid of that?
No, they don't. Not these people.
But,
they want their child to believe what I tell you, and that's it.
Then they shouldn't have kids.
Can we continue to let him watch everything? Or should we put a filter on absolutely every bit of media he is watching?
Oh, my God.
At only 6 years old. And our kid is six, too. So that's...
Yeah.
Put yourself in this position.
Look this commercial up and make him watch
it. At only 6 years old, this is too early. All we wanted to do was watch an animated movie with him.
Oh, God.
I feel it is clear that every time we sit down with him and watch TV, we will need to be prepared for bigger questions. That's your job as a fucking parent. It is a shame that we can't take our eyes off our son for a single second.
Wow. Oh. I wonder what they do when he's in the pool.
Double down. Thank God we homeschool.
Jesus Christ.
No, God. Well, I mean, I guess they're kind of the same person.
Depends on your translation.
I need to find new makeup now. I can't support this.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Seriously.
I am caught in a slippery slope, now hesitant to let him go over to a friend's house. Our world is headed in a direction where my six-year-old son is having to grow up so much faster than I want him to. David and I must now determine how we are going to handle these big issues when we are not together. Should have done if you'd a good couple. If David and I haven't discussed something and he is alone with Mark, what will he say? Do we need to talk and then lay it all out right now? Or do we wait for Mark and the other kids to start discovering these issues? It is incredible how a 30-second clip created such turmoil in my house.
Well, what is she going to do when she finds this kid in the bathroom or the bedroom with the door locked in a sock and
Beating the off, Sears catalog?
Or,
oh, God, not the Sears catalog.
Well, you know, I'm sure she doesn't let Victoria's Secret catalogs into the house because, I mean...
Oh, sure. So, there's the picture, right? There's...
Yeah.
It looks fine to me. So, I think the fun thing to do here... The op-ed piece by itself is its thing, right? And that's obviously we have opinions about it very strongly. But let's dig into some of the 203 responses to this article. Jess Bachelor says, as a secular homeschool mom of three, these are issues that every mom is forced to answer. Even if your religion doesn't claim it is wrong, it's a tough question to explain to a kid, especially a six-year-old. And then the replies to that, the first one says, it's literally one of the simplest things to explain. Q, why is he wearing makeup? A, because he likes to wear makeup.
Yep. Sounds like the good
one. Sounded pretty easy to me.
Answer to me. Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the, I would like to applaud Sarah for standing up for what she believes in. This was one of the best letters I have read in a long time, and I truly wish that more of these letters had been written before our great nation hopped on the rainbow road to oblivion. Our nation was founded to be a Christian nation based off the words of the Bible, and I don't know about the rest of you, but my Bible says that God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and they didn't have to fight for 30 years or 50 years or all of eternity to make their affection accepted by the rest of the world because he created them, male and female, created he them. This is how it should be, and the day our nation sold out to the sinful nature of homosexuality under the guise of acceptance and gender as a construct, it truly lost all of my respect. All that you individuals want is to be recognized for going against what we really are. You fight so hard for it because it is wrong, and you have to fight to get it accepted. If you want to be whatever it is you want to be, he, she, it, nothing, whatever, then go someplace else and be it. Don't corrupt the future youth of the world and force your corrupted opinions down their unsuspecting throats. So when we talk about the political divide in our nation right now, this is the type of shit that we're up against. And I don't know how, what amount of sitting down and trying to listen to the opposite perspective is going to ever bring us any closer when you have somebody spouting this kind of nonsense.
Well, yeah, they're very obviously made up in their minds, just as
we are.
We are.
Right.
There has to be somehow on both ends an agree to disagree, meet in the middle bridge, but I just don't see it happening.
So, and remember, this is a homeschool like blog forum
right.
group. So I assume that Bob, who posted this, is a homeschooly member of this community and not just, you know, somebody like us trolling along.
Right.
But you don't know. So a reply to Bob, Jocelyn says, you do know a good chunk of the founding fathers were deists, right? Like James Madison, who wrote the Bill of Rights, and Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, and maybe even George Washington himself. If you don't know, deists are not Christians. They're more like Unitarians. So yeah, the U.S. wasn't created as a Christian nation. Also, I find it hilarious this stuff bothers you so much, because honestly, I would think the increasing amount of violence in the media would be more concerning to parents. But no, you think what's ruining this country is people who feel romantic or even sexual attraction to members of the same sex. By the way, just so you know, I'm a bisexual woman. I hope that makes you uncomfortable. Ciao! Yes!
Good for her.
But yeah, the comments in this story are the best. So you gotta go check that out. It's the homeschoolbase.com.
Next. Stuck on the rainbow road to oblivion.
Rainbow road to oblivion. I want to create an intro. I just haven't figured out what it's going to be yet. Remember when we did the
Justice League?
Yeah, the Vigilante Justice League. I want to do one for the war on Christmas.
Yes.
And I don't know if I want to make it like a kind of with the war-y sounding music, or if I want to make it like a war reporter, right? Like coming from the front lines of the war on Christmas. Right? That kind of thing. I don't know. This one comes from the Raw Story. Louisiana Christians reclaim a safe space by running an atheist Christmas billboard out of town. And we've seen a lot of this stuff already pop up in the last couple of weeks with, you know, the Satanic Church has fought back against religious Christmas displays on public property
right.
by putting up their own. What was the one we looked at last week? There was a banner that basically said Christmas was hijacked by the Christians.
Right.
It's a pagan ritual, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And somebody defaced it, came
right.
up with spray paint and covered it all up. A billboard promoting atheism during the holiday season has been run out of town by Christians in Monroe, Louisiana, who deemed it too offensive for their community's religious sensibilities to tolerate. Local news station KNOE reports that a billboard paid for by the American Atheist Organization has been removed after multiple people in Monroe complained about being offended by it. The electronic billboard told people that they could, quote, make Christmas great again, end quote, by skipping church this year, while also promoting the concept of an atheist Christmas. The message proved to be so offensive for Christians in the community that they successfully demanded that it be taken down. quote, "I praise God that there was so much stirred up about it that it was taken down," end quote. Monroe resident Sean Cooper told KNOE. Nick Fish, the program director for American Atheists, told KNOE that he doesn't regret offending people with the billboard, as he feels it's needed to spark conversations about the role of religion in the United States. He says they need to get over themselves and realize this is a country with a lot of viewpoints, and they're not the only ones with a view on this. Let's watch the video from KNOE.
And holiday billboards, not so jolly and bright. Shelley Silvestri tells us tonight about a billboard that only lasted 2 hours in Monroe before your complaints got it taken down.
It's definitely a strong Christian community and a lot of strong believers in this area.
Strong believers who hold tight to their Christian views. Monroe is directly in the middle of the Bible Belt, where this year's Atheist American holiday billboards are not welcomed by a majority of residents.
We're a Christian area, and I praise God that there was so much stirred up about it that it was taken down.
I'm sorry, when I read Sean Cooper's quote in the article, I didn't read it the right way. Should have gone, "I praise God that there was so much stirred up about it that it was taken down." See if I got that right.
We're a Christian area, and I praise God that there was so much stirred up about it that it was taken down.
Yeah, I think I got it right. That was good.
What was taken down were two digital billboards paid for by the American Atheist Organization. The billboards were highly visible from Highway 165 near Pecanland Mall and promoted the idea to skip church this Christmas. While people we spoke with were bothered,
I guess just disbelief, because the fact that it says Atheist Christmas totally goes against what they're trying to push in the first place.
We're kind of the heart of the Bible Belt here, and if you were on the East Coast or West Coast, it'd probably be much more accepted.
Program director for American Atheist, Nick Fish, says the controversy was expected.
We kind of expect it to happen at least once every holiday season.
The billboards lasted less than 2 hours in Monroe before the billboard company, Outreach Media, suggested the organization take it down. Fish says whether their message was well received or not,
they need to get over themselves, and they need to realize that this is a country made up of lots of different viewpoints, and that they aren't, they aren't the only ones with a view on this.
Taken down, but still being talked about. In Monroe, Shelley Silvestri, KNOE 8 News.
I think the conversation needs to be sparked. I mean, obviously, the American Atheist Organization is trying to do a couple of things. The first thing is to say that the equality of belief,
right,
the freedom of religion includes the freedom from religion. And while this is a private, you know, billboard company, and this isn't the first one we've seen, just in the last month or so, with an atheist message that was demanded to be taken down, but that was by the owner of the business where the billboard was placed. This is a little different.
Right.
But that's to say that the stuff that we're seeing on the grounds of the state houses, where they put up a nativity scene, but they won't allow a secular, or, you know, if we're not paying respects to all religions, then we should not respect a religion. In the public forum, in state taxpayer properties. So this is a little different than that, right? But then we have to consider the freedom of speech and the freedom of expression. And most people don't understand what those things actually mean as written. In law, the freedom of expression and the freedom of speech only says that the government cannot prohibit those things. So you're free to say whatever you want. I'm free to say you're stupid.
Right.
Right. So getting offended that there's an atheist message out there, get offended all you want, because I have just as much right to express my opinion on that as you have to express your opinion on that.
Right.
In the forum of ideas. And now, from CBC News back to Canada, family and friends of 26-year-old Eloise Dubois gathered Sunday to remember a young woman whose death has sparked a movement. Dubois' aunt, Manon Boyer, wants Quebec's civil code amended to prevent a further tragedy like the death of her Jehovah's Witness niece. She repeated that call on Saturday, as did others in attendance. And I'm going to butcher the fuck out of these names because they're, you know, French-Canadian.
Right.
And I butcher everybody's name, so you guys should be used to that by now. Dubois died in October, shortly after giving birth to her first child by cesarean section. I picked out this story because I thought you might have some thoughts on it. Complications led to a hemorrhage, but the new mother refused a blood transfusion in accordance with the church's policy against them. Suzanne Dupuis and Manon Boyer, aunts of Eloise Dupuis, want Quebec's civil code changed to give doctors the right to administer life-saving treatment in situations where free and informed consent is in doubt. That's a decision that many who knew her can't fathom, and one they worry was made under pressure from other members of her Jehovah's Witness community. Boyer said, "We need to adjust our thinking on what constitutes free and informed consent." She couldn't wait to meet her son. She was so impatient, so full of love for him, and I'm certain she never would have accepted leaving him. "And that's why we're here today," said another aunt. "The law has to change. We can't lose our children like this, our grandchildren, our nieces, and this is just the tip of the iceberg." Care to weigh in? I don't know if you want to tell the story or not. You've been.
How much time do you have?
We got all kinds of time. You've been pretty open about.
Okay, so
our stories.
There's a lot for this because I was born in 1983.
Such a kid.
I know, and at that time, that was when people were getting AIDS from blood transfusions.
Right.
It was before science had evolved and they were able to
figure that out
and make sure people were getting the good stuff. Anyway, my mom, she went into labor. They ended up having to do an emergency cesarean to get me out because I was being stubborn and I didn't want to come out. Now I know why. Anyway, so they had to do an emergency cesarean. She lost a lot of blood. The doctors were telling my dad that she was going to die if she didn't have a blood transfusion, and she was refusing a transfusion. At that point in time, my dad had no idea what Jehovah's Witnesses beliefs were. My mom had not really, she'd left, and this was like before she came back. We were much older when she came back, but all my dad knew was that my mom didn't want this, and the doctor pulled him outside and said, "All you have to do is sign this paper." And at this point, they weren't married yet. He was just the baby's daddy, but the doctors were trying to manipulate him into agreeing to do this blood transfusion. And I don't know, her family was there. That would have been her next of kin, I would think. I don't know. I was still in the womb, so I don't know all the details. but I do know parts of the story were that they were trying to get him to sign this paper so that she didn't die. And he was like, "Nope, this is her wishes. I don't know why." And the doctors were like, "Well, she won't even have to know about it." And my dad was like, "Well, I'll know." And, you know.
Yeah, right.
So good for him for standing his ground and respecting her wishes. She did end up living despite not having a blood transfusion. The problem there is that that just solidified her belief that Jehovah took care of her, even though, you know, she had been out, but she stood firm in her, "I'm not going to take blood," years down the road. Now,
can I interrupt just to say that your mother is also one of those people who believes a thing based on hearing it once and not finding supportive correlatory evidence. And so, and this is the problem with anecdotal evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Now in her mind, all blood transfusions are summarily dismissed because she didn't get one and she lived. So
yes,
everyone else cannot get one and live too.
Right.
That's just the way her head works.
Sure,
like,
absolutely.
That's just the way her mind processes that.
Yeah, absolutely. It worked for her, so it must work for everybody.
Right. So, fast forward.
Okay, so fast forward. So, I was in the hospital having our second baby, scheduled cesarean, much more calm than an emergency cesarean. But still, you know, things happen.
Right.
I was not, my uterus wasn't contracting, so I was still losing blood after the baby was out. We're talking hours after the procedure was done, and I'm laying in the bed, and it's just...
Yeah, like, they were concerned about it up and through the night into the next morning,
right,
before it finally started slowing down.
It was so bad that they were taking the pads out and weighing how much blood I was losing.
Right.
The normal person can live comfortably normally with, what's the hemoglobin count of 12, I think. Mine had dropped down to under 6. My mom came into the room, and she didn't really know what was going on, that they were just in there doing the pad change out, and she saw the scale and all the blood and
overheard them talking about it.
Overheard them talking about it, and it was just clot after clot after really big clot. And the doctor came in while she was there. And this was like maybe 5 hours after the baby was born.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still that night. It was still pretty close afterwards. I think they had just finished the second dose of Pitocin to try to make my uterus contract, and it wasn't working. Now, for those of you who've never been through this type of procedure, what they do before you even go in, you have to sign your life away. And it's a huge stack of papers, and they ask you all these questions. And one of the questions in one of the papers you have to sign is, if anything were to go wrong, would you accept a blood transfusion?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, if the answer is no, there's a whole nother, like, column where you can say,
right.
I'll,
like, choose your own adventure. This
right,
is what happens
yeah.
after that. If you say no to this, then you could choose these other
things.
You can
say no to whole blood, but I'll accept fractions,
right,
or
right.
there's all kinds of different options, right?
And the church has changed its opinion on what you can and can't say yes to now.
They've kind of modified what their, it's gone back and forth, you know, and I don't know what it is currently, what their suggestion is, but they have.
But it's none of their business
right.
to
well,
say.
Well, they actually have whole congregation meetings where they talk about this because they do these cards every year to put in your wallet.
That's so insane. So
it's like an emergency contact card, but it's a directions for like what type of.
Right.
You know,
right.
what type of procedure you would, you know, whatever. Anyway, it's an hour dedicated to helping people write down the right answer on their card. So we did all of this, and I said, yes, I would take a blood transfusion, all of this stuff. And I had spoken to the doctor about this because with my first pregnancy, this wasn't an issue. I actually had an emergency cesarean, but there was no problem. So, but that one wasn't planned. That was with the first one. It was, for me, it was more overwhelming because I thought I was going to go in, give a few pushes, have some contractions and pop a baby out. And then all of a sudden they're saying, all right, we're going to cut you open. And because of the stories I had always heard of how my mom had me, I was terrified of having a cesarean. And then the first one was so easy that when the doctor said the second time, we're going to have to do it again, I'm not giving you a VBAC. I went, okay, let's do it. Like, I was much more calm the second time around. And then, of course, all of this stuff happens. But I had talked to the doctor, and he said his very last option to do was give a blood transfusion to anybody. It was maybe worst case scenario for him, was all the discussions we had talked about it a couple of times in office visits leading up to the cesarean. And then even that day afterwards, when I noticed we were clotting, we had a little bit of a talk with him about it. But my mom was never there, so she didn't really have any idea what the conversations were with my doctor. She just walked into the room, saw all the blood, and like immediately, I could see when she realized that there was a problem, she turned the color of blood. Like, she just
right.
immediately bright red.
Yep.
And she's holding my newborn child.
And she's shaking.
And
like
she's like,
you could visibly
yeah,
see
you,
she was upset.
She was really, really upset. And I mean, I get it. It's your kid. You feel helpless and you're, you know, worried. Was she shaking because she thought I was going to die? Was she shaking because she thought I was going to have a blood transfusion? I don't know. I couldn't get in her head. All I knew was it looks like that might have to happen, and I need to get her out of the room.
Yeah. And you straight up said, you need to go.
Yeah, you need to go. I said, I did. I had to tell her, you need to leave. This is not the time or place for you to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that to get her out of the way. But also because I wasn't even upset. I didn't even realize how bad the problem was, to be honest. I didn't feel sick. I didn't feel nauseous. One time I got a little nauseous, but I felt great. I didn't realize that I had lost so much blood, and everybody was kind of it just seemed like they were fretting over something, and it was no big deal, to be honest. I just didn't feel like I thought somebody would feel. So I didn't really understand what was going on because I was like, I could get up and go to the bathroom if I needed to. That's just how I felt. I mean, I was laying in a bed, obviously.
And you probably have high tolerance for pain anyway. Like, you're just,
right.
you like, just get
yeah.
up and do what you got to do.
Right. I pushed through a lot of things.
Right.
Everybody was all worried about all this blood, and I'm just like, what's the big deal? I bled a lot after the first one, you know, And then when they called the doctor in and they pushed out that 1 pound clot is kind of when I started to go, oh crap. But this was after I kicked my mom out, and I did kick her out because she was upsetting me. And up until that point, I wasn't upset, but just her presence and her reaction to things. And she started to tell the nurse that there's ways around blood transfusions. And at that point, nobody had ever even said the word blood transfusion.
Right.
Like, it hadn't even come up.
They were just talking about a high loss of blood.
Right.
That's it. Just.
And from what I understand now, having done research about this stuff, most people do push that to the last resort. Because there's so many medicines and things that you can do to build that.
And as it turns out, in the middle of the night, they changed your medicine and
it worked. Yeah. And I was up out of bed, and even the nurse saw me walk into the ice thing and was like, what are you doing? Like, she hugged me because she was so like, she thought I was going to be in there for a while because of how much blood I had lost. But the next day I was up and ready to go.
Did you ever have a conversation with your mother after that?
No.
About it?
No, I didn't.
Good for you.
I let it alone. But so back to this story about this woman and whether or not she was pressured into having to refuse the blood transfusion.
Yeah.
I think that's very likely.
Oh, sure.
Because when you're in that situation, like, I'm strong enough now because of being out of that environment and finding my own voice that I could kick my mom out of the room and say, you can't be in here. But most people that are stuck in that religion under the mind control, they're not strong enough to speak up for themselves and say, I just need some privacy or whatever. I've talked to many former witnesses about this in various communities, and a story that will stick out in my head is this girl that she's an RN, she's an ex Jehovah's Witness, and she gets patients in all the time that are Jehovah's Witnesses who need blood transfusions, and they will pull the nurse aside and say, I want to have a blood transfusion, but I don't want anybody to know about it. They have special bags to put over the blood bags to hide it.
Wow.
And for the IVs, everything. There are ways to hide it. And the hospital staffs know about this. Like, the staff is like, no problem, we'll take care of it. Your family never has to know.
Wow.
The trick is getting your family out of the room long enough
for them to set it
for
up.
For you to say,
do it.
Yes, please give me blood.
Right.
And then, but I don't want them to know. But that's the thing about the Jehovah's Witnesses. They have this liaison committee that comes into the hospital. And once the liaison committee knows a witness is in the hospital and they might need a blood transfusion,
they don't leave.
They stake out the room and they won't leave them alone.
Well, and that comes back to this story a little bit where the family here was calling for a change in the law that would allow the doctors to just summarily say, no, no, this is a life-saving procedure, and we're going to do it. The same as if you were unable to communicate properly that you needed, that there was something going on with your heart and you needed a bypass. But you know what I mean? Like, if there are any kind of emergency surgery, and the argument that they were making with that was, what was that phrase? You know, we need to adjust our thinking on what constitutes free and informed consent. Right? So if you have been led to believe by a religious organization that this is bad, even though all of science says it's safe and it is a viable life-saving solution to whatever it is that's going on, that the doctor can override all of that and say, nay, nay, Fluffy, you get blood.
Well, one of the things I think about too is, when you're a doctor and you're in the ER, you're trained to evaluate a situation. At what point do we start looking at these cases and maybe classify some of them as spousal or child abuse?
Well, sure.
Because if a child comes into the ER with an unexplained broken leg, they're going to be calling
Child
Protective Services to evaluate the situation. If a woman comes in and she fell down the stairs, and they're going to be looking at the whole situation. Are you being coaxed into not telling me the truth? The more stories that come out about children that die because of lack of blood transfusions in the Jehovah's Witness organization, I think that's where it's going to because when an adult does it, an adult is
you're making a decision for yourself.
There was another one, I don't remember where it was, but it was a few months ago, where a child had died because of not receiving a blood transfusion. I think the more that that happens, the more attention they will get. But if it's an adult, it's not going to be as much of a big deal. Because with children, the hospital can step in and say,
on their behalf.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, let's go to jw.org. I don't know where to start. Dramatic Bible readings, like, makes me interested. I haven't ever watched any of these. I'm sure you've seen some of them, but do I want to hear a dramatic Bible reading, or do I want to go, like, to the video library?
The Bible readings are going to be probably boring because they just read the Bible in dramatic voiceovers.
Oh, that might be funny, though. Hang on, let me listen to a bit of one.
Jehovah is the only true God.
Oh, no, you've got to look at this guy.
Oh, this is...
Jehovah is the only true God.
Which one? This is... I think that's Let. Everybody in the XJW community calls him Let the Clown.
Jehovah is the only true God.
Doesn't he look like a clown? The rubber face.
Some wicked spirits, and even humans, have deceitfully pretended to be gods. Other gods are nothing more than figments of human imagination.
Oh, his mouth just makes me want to smack something.
I can't. That's us.
I can't even deal.
I think.
Those who put their trust in false gods are sure to be disappointed. False gods are incapable of blessing or protecting their worshipers. Psalm 96:5 says, "All the gods of the peoples are worthless gods."
Okay, I can't do it. I can't. And it's 30 minutes long. We don't have time for that shit. All right, what else we got?
That's Stephen Lett. They call him Clownface or something. Because he's got
the... Oh, yeah, he's something. Oh, okay. Do you want to watch the...
That's boring. That's so stupid.
The Dora and Diego videos or whatever they're called.
That I watched that one because I was hoping for some really interesting...
No, not necessarily this one, but
you could go to
one of those.
Them. Yeah.
All right. Oh, they're songs. That's fun.
Oh, the songs are annoying. You got to get the experience, though.
Oh, no. I'm good. Thanks. Feature-length movies? No, thank you. All right. There's nothing here. What happened to Become Jehovah's Friend? What happened to... Oh, maybe it's teenagers.
They might only have one Caleb and Sophia video on the website at any time. They have a YouTube channel, too. Might be on their YouTube channel.
You sure it's not Dora and Diego?
Well, what I'm confused about is they named the kid Caleb and they named the girl Sophia, and I don't think Sophia is a Bible name.
Sophia in the Bible. Sophia, wisdom. Sophia is the Greek word for wisdom. Sophiology. This is a philosophical concept regarding wisdom, as well as a theological concept regarding the wisdom of the biblical God. Sophia is honored as a goddess of wisdom by Gnostics, as well as by some neo-pagan, New Age, and goddess spirituality groups. So you can cut that out of the Wikipedia and send it on over to the J-Dubs. I'm sure they'd appreciate that. What about Jehovah designed all things? Because this is going to be about intelligent design versus evolution. Oh, I love it already. There's a little butterfly floating through the air in their neighborhood. There's little Dora.
Whoa, they're so beautiful.
Okay, this is going to be the things are beautiful because God argument.
Do butterflies know they're beautiful?
No, they don't.
What? How do you know what a butterfly knows? How do you know? Who are you to say that you know anything about what a butterfly thinks, knows, or does?
Then why did Jehovah make them so pretty? For us.
Oh my God. No. For us. No, come on. Come on.
No, they don't.
Then why did Jehovah make them so pretty? For us.
I can't.
He loves us and wants us to have beauty all around.
Then why did Jehovah make ugly people? Is that coming next?
Well, not even that. If you'd stick with the creationist theory, there's a lot of things in creation that are ugly that are not human.
Absolutely.
So I would like to hear the explanation about that. And do they know that they're ugly?
No.
Pufferfish?
Pufferfish aren't that ugly.
They're kind of ugly.
Yeah.
Some of them are
slugs.
Yeah.
Now think of all the different butterflies you've seen.
There's a blue one and a yellow one.
Awesome!
And an orange one.
Did you know that every single butterfly starts out as a caterpillar? Look how cute they are. Aww.
Okay, she just transformed into Dora the Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
She got a magnifying glass.
And even before that, the mommy butterfly has to find the right leaf to lay her caterpillar eggs, since it's going to be her baby's food.
Nice! I can't believe that this turns into this.
I can't believe that something so ugly, which they said was beautiful, the caterpillar, that a caterpillar could turn into a butterfly.
Star-nosed mole is pretty ugly.
Isn't it great that Jehovah designed so many wonderful things for us to discover? That shows how much he loves us.
I can't wait to be in paradise to study every butterfly that Jehovah has designed.
So paradise gives you all the butterflies? Is that part of your...
Apparently. Paradise is what happens to the earth after Armageddon destroys all the wickedness. And then the earth becomes a beautiful paradise and you live there forever. And you never die.
Why would I want that?
I don't know.
Oh, you know what? Once Jehovah gets rid of all the wicked things, you know, maybe the world won't be so bad because all of the religious people will be gone.
Jehovah made so many amazing things. What's your favorite?
My favorite is the free will Jehovah gave me to not believe any of your bullshit. That's going to be it for today, episode 35. Don't forget, call us, leave a message with your holiday greetings. Call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. Leave us a holiday greeting in our voicemail. Tell us your favorite holiday traditions and memories, and we'll play those on the next couple of shows. Next week, Florida State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith. We're going to be on to talk about the election, 2016, Trump's America, the fight for a $15 minimum wage, and how we as progressives are going to regroup and protect our minority communities. That's all next week on Sarah Talk.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/SarahTalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@saratalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/SarahTalkRadio and on Twitter @SarahTalkRadio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.